Hi, I'm Brian Hart.
I'm Karen Holman.
And you're listening to
Cool Sheets.
In the coming half hour, you'll hear all about 10 things that we're currently enjoying and using in our lives.
Each of us has exactly 2 minutes to dive in and tell you about one of the things we've chosen.
It might be a book, an app, a gadget, a place, anything goes.
At the end of our 2 minutes, boom, time's up, and we go back and forth until we've shared 10 cool sheets with you.
Cool Sheets is all about fun, interesting, and or useful things to enhance your life.
We broadcast from our studios in Salem, Oregon, on KMUZ Turner, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, or streaming online at kmuz.org, every Sunday from 9 to 9:30 a.m.
Our website, coolsheets.cool, yes, that's coolsheets.cool, has info about all the cool sheets that we list every week if you want to find out more details about them.
You can also interact with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Here we go with this week's Cool Sheets. Hello and welcome to Cool Sheets. I'm Karen Holman, and Brian is still in the United Kingdom, but in his place, I have a very special guest.
Hi there. I'm Elizabeth Larson, and I'm a chemistry student at Willamette University.
It's so great to have you, and I really appreciate that you're willing to come in and do this.
Anytime, Karen.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I'm going to go first, and my first cool sheet is an interview, and this is called Secrets of a Tree Planting Highballer. So I was really interested when I first heard about this, because whenever someone talks about tree planting, I imagine that there are people who get together in their local park and they bring their kids and they're handed maybe a little shovel and they plant a few trees that morning and that's it. And when I heard about this, I realized that I was dead wrong, that there are people who are out there on the slopes of mountains, and it totally makes sense once I found out about it. But when there's clear cutting going, when there's any kind of forestry stuff happening, there needs to be replanting. And going out there and doing it is not trivial. So this man, Greg Nolan, he wrote a memoir and he reflects on this whole career. He's been doing it for 27 years. It's full of adventure, pain, a lot of carb loading, and just amazing stories. So what I think surprised me the most about this is when he said he has hired people, because at this point, he is one of the leaders. He's a business owner that does this. And he was hiring people, and he, of course, looked for people with a lot of physical strength and endurance. And so he hired triathletes, and he has had 5 triathletes at this point that he handpicked, he thought would succeed, and every single one of them quit. So that tells you a little bit about how gnarly this is, what he's doing, and all of his just anecdotes that he tells about, all of the beautiful things that he's talked about, these huge tree sides. A lot of what he's doing is in British Columbia, so he's way up high altitudes doing this. Really great stories and just a really surprising thing that I learned about. Secrets of a Tree Planting Highballer. Good job.
Hi there. So I'm going to talk to you about the Mustang Makeover Competition. This is an organization that was founded about 12 years ago, and their goal was to adopt more wild Mustangs and burros out to the public. Since the Wild and Free Roaming Horses and Burros Act of 1971 was passed, wild horses on public lands have been protected. However, the adoption rates of these Mustangs out to homes hasn't kept up with that population growth. So there are currently about 50,000 Mustangs across the United States that are kept in government-funded holding facilities awaiting adoption, which is quite sad. So many horses that need homes. And so this program realized that a big barrier for these horses is not having any kind of training or education to be a useful riding horse for the average American. So what they set out to do was to create a competition that would bring talented trainers from across the United States and to pick out a random Mustang and work with them for 100 days and then bring them back to competition and test their skills. And so this contest has inspired all sorts of crazy and wonderful displays of talent between people, you know, taking these wild horses that have never been touched or handled and 100 days having them working cattle, roping cattle, climbing on top of moving trucks and pulling boats behind them and all sorts of creative displays in their freestyles where they're showing just how much you can do with this horse that has no background or no training. The Mustang Makeover Competition is really fun to watch, and there are Mustang Makeover events in Texas, Idaho, and Kentucky next year. You can watch them live, or if you want to learn more about the training process, you can watch them in Wild Horse, Wild Ride, a documentary that was released in 2012.
That's awesome. That is something I definitely never knew about, and I kind of want to watch now, especially this horses pulling boats.
Yes.
So the horses are swimming, or are they...
Well, okay, let me make some modifications here. So there were no, like, physical boats. It's just that they're just showing how bomb-proof these horses are. So they're getting, like, a plastic boat and just...
Gotcha.
But the horse doesn't mind that there's a massive boat behind them and, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Well, my next cool sheet, I'm going to be talking about a poet. I wanted to talk about this poet, one, because I don't read poetry, and I like talking about cool sheets of things that I don't necessarily like, because I imagine that maybe other people who also aren't really into poetry might enjoy her. So her name is Mary Oliver, and I think she's super famous. But again, if you're not into poetry, you're not in those circles. But I think once I say some of her quotes, you'll go, oh, yeah, I've heard that before. So she was amazing, and she just passed away earlier in 2019, which is a shame, but she did, as far as I can tell, lived a wonderful life. I think she was 83 when she died. She's won numerous awards. She won the Pulitzer. She won the National Book Award, the Lannan Literary Award for Lifetime Achievement. And she really started out in her career writing about nature. She grew up in the Massachusetts area. And I think that's something people who do appreciate nature and how difficult it is to describe beauty in nature with words. You can barely even do it with a photograph. And that she can do that so eloquently is amazing. And that is something we can all relate to. But of course, we also, being humans, we want to relate to ourselves and our emotions and another thing that is so hard to describe with words. And so what happened in her life is she moved from talking and writing more about nature to more of talking about the human condition. And I think that's really when a lot of people started... I'm thinking that's when she became more pervasive and hearing more quotes about things she had to say. So this is one of her quotes. "Tell me what it is you plan to do with your one wild and precious life. When it's over, I want to say, all my life I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. Instructions for living a life, pay attention, be astonished, tell about it."
Shh, shh. Wow, Karen, that makes me really want to go on a hike.
Yes. We should all go on hikes every day.
So I'm back, and I'm changing our topic from beautiful nature to products that originally did come from nature, food. So I'm going to talk to you about Imperfect Produce. Imperfect Produce is this company that distributes yummy, delicious, safe to eat, but ugly produce to your doorstep, because a lot of food goes to waste in the United States. Expanding upon that, approximately 20 billion pounds of produce go to waste every single year in the U.S., often because the fruits and veggies do not meet grocery store strict cosmetic standards. It's pretty tough to live up to. So food waste has negative impacts upon the environment and gobbles up 1/5 of our water supply and 1/5 of our landfill volume. So if you want to make a small impact, you can sign up for Imperfect Produce, which saves some of this fruit from going to waste, and then sorts it and mails it to your doorstep. And you just sign up, you get a subscription, you decide like what kind of fruits and veggies you want, what size, and the food is kind of at a 30% discount. So it's a more affordable way to get those fresh veggies. And the company also has made promises to have its employees paid within the 75th percentile or higher. So that includes its drivers and its packagers, go to imperfectproduce.com if you want to set up your own fruit and veggie subscription today. Think about how centered you'll be going on your hikes, reading your poetry, eating your veggies. You are living the dream.
That's awesome. Do you know if they have any organic?
Yes, they do have some organic options. They work with a lot of farmers. Their company is based, I think, in California, but they work with a bunch of different farmers down there.
That's wonderful. I love it. I love it. And, you know, Brian, my co-host, he worked in produce for a while, and I bet he would have so much to say about this, but he's not here. So maybe he'll do a PS episode on it, huh, Brian? Okay. I'm going to move on. And hey, speaking of that hike, here's a place you can go for a hike. This is an article that is about a road trip. And I know you are from Bend. I'm from La Grande. So the name of this article is The Ultimate Eastern Oregon Road Trip is Right Here. Honestly, you could just sit there and look at the photos on this article and you'd be done. I mean, of course, it's way better to go there. But if you can't go on this road trip, it's worth just clicking the link at coolsheets.cool and looking at this these lovely photographs. So this particular road trip is doable in 3 days. It is, of course, not all-inclusive of all of eastern Oregon. I'm actually leaving out this whole section of northeastern Oregon where I grew up, but I have talked about the Wallawas before. So this is kind of cool because it focuses on the more southeastern portion. If you're starting in the Willamette Valley, then you would head towards Sisters. And, of course, there's lovely things on the way up there depending on which river valley you're going up, the Mackenzie or the North Saniam. And when you get to Sisters, they recommend checking out this old stagecoach. And then there's also this ghost town I had never heard of called Milliken. It's 25 miles east of Bend. And then they went to Crystal Crane Hot Springs. This sounds amazing. It's not far from Burns. So once you get to Burns, you are deep into eastern Oregon, southeastern Oregon. Crystal Crane has a teepee and other accommodations, but the hot springs themselves sound amazing. And then you can head and go to Steens Mountains, this singular just mountain, because there's just one, where it's a gradual slope on one side and then drops down and there's the Alvor Desert. There's nothing like silence in that region of the state of Oregon that I highly recommend. So again, this article, The Ultimate Eastern Oregon Road Trip.
Wow, Karen, down in Burns, there is the Mustang holding facility where I picked up my Mustang
what?
A couple years ago. So it's a pretty fun visit. There's lots of horses to look at.
That's amazing.
Bring a trailer or just window shop, your choice.
Wow. But, wow. That's so cool. These are all tying together.
Yeah, it's working out great.
That happens all the time with Brian and I. It's so cool. Like, yeah, nice.
We know what we need to talk about. We know what's important.
That's right.
Okay. Moving on to important topics, we know how important glitter is to our lives. The effervescent, wonderful, small little particles that get everywhere on anything, on any surface, whether we want them to or not. They glimmer, they glitter, they sparkle. It's magical. So I wanted to share an article today that was actually published in the New York Times in December, but it's still one of my favorite reads. And they explore this very topic of glitter, which happens to be highly mysterious and quite educational. I'd like to start out as a chemistry major by saying, what really is glitter? It's aluminum metallized polyethylene terephthalate. Might have butchered the last one, but Karen is here. She can recover for me. If you need to know, you can ask her. And I wanted to read a passage out of this article because I don't want to spoil everything, but here's a little taste. What is glitter? The simplest answer is that one that will leave you slightly unsatisfied, but at least with your confidence in comprehending basic physical properties intact. Glitter is made from glitter. Big glitter begets smaller glitter. Smaller glitter gets everywhere. All glitter is impossible to remove. Now never ask this question again. Ah, but if you, like an impertinent child seeking a logistical timetable of Santa Claus's nocturnal intercontinental journey, demand a more detailed definition, a word of warning, the path to enlightenment is littered with trade secrets, vapors, aluminum ignits, CIA levels of obfuscation, the invisible regions of the visible spectrum. a unit of measurement expressed as 6 to the negative 10 meters, which is micro, by the way, and also New Jersey. So what I found most interesting about this article is it explores this very secretive factory in New Jersey. And New Jersey is the only place in the world that manufactures all of the glitter. So go and find all of the secrets.
This is crazy. One place makes all the glitter.
Oh, okay, I'll make a correction. Two factories. There's only two factories. Okay. Both of them are in the state of New Jersey.
But they're both in New Jersey.
One of them was so secretive, they refused to even speak with the New York Times editor.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. And even then, they were not allowed into the factory where they were manufacturing said glitter. It is such a prized operation.
Wow.
Yes.
So I could not help but remember this comedian said about glitter once that it is the herpes of the craft world.
It's contagious.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Bedazzling. Bedazzling.
And that this is your favorite article of all time.
I think it is. Amazing. I have yet to have a better one. There are probably more worldly articles I have read, or maybe more significant. But as far as entertaining and well-written and interesting, this
yes.
is the best.
Yes. And random, like glitter.
And incredibly random and mind-blowing.
Yes. Awesome. Okay, my next cool sheet. I am going to be talking about a YouTube channel. And this is called Journey to the Microcosmos. So last episode, I talked about Cosmos, the one from the 80s that Carl Sagan did. Journey to the Microcosmos is so beautiful. And it is all about microorganisms. It is a collaboration between, first, there is a YouTube channel that already exists called Jams Germs. And this is James Weiss. He's a scientist of microorganisms. He's a biologist, researcher, expert, and he is a fantastic imager. So he is capturing these beautiful, elegant, and also just calming and peaceful images of these little microorganisms swimming around with their cilia and their little arms and engulfing and eating each other and just all those things, and super colorful. It's amazing. He has partnered with Hank Green. I keep mentioning Hank Green, but I can't help it because he does so many amazing things. He is essentially the voice of this YouTube channel. And he's taking a completely different slant because usually he's extremely high energy and fast. Here he is very calming. And this goes along with the third part of this trifecta of people that have come together, and that is Andrew Huang, who has made the music for it. So he comes in and he creates essentially a soundtrack for each one of these videos. They're about 10 minutes long or so. And it's very soothing, meditative music, really lovely. But of course, you're learning stuff. They're talking about these different microorganisms, and it's just really fun. It's a brand new YouTube channel. I'm already in love with it. Journey to the Microcosmos.
Shh. Pretty cosmic, Karen. What a good Sunday morning. Doing well. So I think it's just as important to our cosmos as the study of cheese and the pursuit of cheesy items. And that's what this one girl did, Linnea Burnham. She was a Middlebury graduate a couple years ago, and she received a Watson Fellow Foundation grant to travel the world and sample cheeses. And not only was she sampling cheeses, she was meeting the cheesemakers, meeting the farms, seeing the different ways in which the cheese was being made. And so she traveled around. She spent 14 months, 2 months in Norway, then 2 months in Italy, England, South Africa, Brazil, Mongolia, and Switzerland. So she circumvented the globe, all in the pursuit of cheese, which is a pretty worthy topic, worth exploring. And she has a blog called journeysofacheesegirl.wordpress.com that you can go and check out to see her beautiful photos of the cheese and learn more about her story. A couple of my favorite photos and moments from her adventures was this time in England when she participated in a cheese wedge race, which is where you take a large block of cheese and you race with several other competitors uphill, pushing this block of cheese all the way up a very steep hill. And I also really enjoyed looking at her photos of spending time in the Mongolian rugged landscapes with some nomadic cheese makers and watching them make fermented mare's milk, which is a very common drink in nomadic Mongolia. So it's not cheesy. It's actually genuinely very good. So check it out.
She essentially got paid to do this, right?
Yes.
I mean, that was her project.
Who would have thunk that you could... This is why you go to college. This is the real reason, is so you can find grants like these.
That's right.
To send you on cheese adventures.
That's super awesome. If you got a Watson Fellowship, what would you do, Elizabeth?
I would definitely go around the world and see how people train their horses. So I would love to go to Mongolia. I would also let her go to Mongolia. Uh-huh. I think I would purchase a couple horses at auction, ride them across half of Mongolia, keep going. I'd go to the Vienna Riding School in Austria and see them work with the Lipizzaners.
Wow.
So that's what I would do.
Wow. Well, now on my last cool sheet, I'm going to give you something to think about, something for me to think about, because this is something I had never heard of, and it is a psychological phenomenon. And I have since found out that there are actually, I think there's a movie called this, there's songs, all this other stuff. But this is a phenomenon called the Uncanny Valley. The Uncanny Valley is this common, unsettling feeling that you have when a human-looking robot looks almost like a human, but not quite. Okay, so this is the hypothesis, or this is the phenomenon first, is if you have some kind of robot or stuffed animal or whatever that doesn't look at all human, but it has certain features, and people are like, oh, that's cool, it's a stuffed animal, or it's just, a little thing, and like, oh, that's fine. And so they studied people's emotional reactions to these things. And as they became closer and closer to looking human, people were like, oh, yeah, okay, and had positive responses. And then you get to this point where they look really, really close to being human, but not, slightly off, and suddenly the emotional response plummets down, and that's why it has this term valley, into repulsion and aversion and unsettling, like that feeling, and where it's creepy, all those kinds of feelings. And then as soon as that android robot looking thing looks completely indistinguishable from a human, then it goes way up and then you're all good with it. So it's this strange phenomenon that was noticed. I think it was a robotics expert noticed this first and coined the term. I think it was in the 70s or something. And so there are hypotheses why this is. And some people think, oh, it has to do with mating. And if there's something wrong, like slightly wrong with someone, or they have a disease or something, that you might have this aversion that you can't help or something. But in any case, so now there's a movie about it. And I think there's a show called that. And actually just today, I Googled Uncanny Valley like just an hour ago. And it turns out there's a song, this techno song was released today called Uncanny Valley. So there you have it. The Valley of Uncanniness.
Fascinating, Karen. I never would have imagined that would be a phenomena.
Very bizarre.
Very bizarre. Well, I'm going to talk about a topic that I already mentioned, some more cheese. But after exploring the wonderful blog, Journeys of a Cheese Girl, you may be feeling inspired, hungry, or maybe both. And you might not be ready to roll oversized cheese wedges up hills or learn how to milk horses in the Mongolian flats. But that doesn't have to stop you from making cheese in your very own home. So, and part of why I chose this topic was my family farm in Bend, we have a small herd of dairy goats ourselves, and when we have too much dairy goat milk, we make cheese, because what else do you do? And cheese is not as scary as it might sound to make. I think that we imagine that, cheese is this unattainable thing that we purchase only from the grocery store, and people that make cheese are demigods. I'm not a demigod. It is really not that hard. You too can make cheese. Particularly soft cheeses. Hard cheeses do require some more work and some patience, but mozzarella and chèvre are within your grasp. So that's what I want to share today is a chèvre recipe. If you look up simple chèvre recipe from Mother Earth News, you'll get a wonderful recipe that doesn't even involve rennet. Rennet is something you would have to purchase from a cheesemaker supplier. This recipe uses vinegar, which is much easier to get your hands on. So what you'll need are 1/2 gallon of goat's milk, some cream, some fresh basil or sage, and just some salt. And it's quite straightforward, really fun, and it takes an hour or less. So give it a go. Get cheesy.
That's awesome. I love Chev. And are you essentially just agitating it? Or no, that's to make butter. I don't know.
So, okay. Well, we will get into the art of cheese making.
There probably isn't time.
There is a little time.
Okay.
There's a little time. You have your goat's milk. You heat it up to 185 degrees. You let it sit at that temperature. You add your vinegar. Let it sit some more. The curds will start to form. You coagulate the curds, let them form. Then you slice the curds. Then you drain the whey. And then you do some more magical things. Add some salt. And then you have cheese.
And you sit on your tuffet and you eat it.
Yes. Then you get your bread out.
That's so great. Oh, okay. I have to try. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me, Karen. It's been wonderful. Thank you for inviting me. Anytime.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Cool Sheets. You can find out more about all the cool sheets we listed by going to our website, coolsheets.cool, and looking for the links.
That's coolsheets.cool. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Leave comments for us on Facebook or email us at info@coolsheets.cool. Bye.